Well, it's the insurance industry's turn to front up to the Banking Royal Commission, and surprise, surprise, they've already made the headlines. Oh, what a surprise. The first insurance company to take the stand admitted it had probably broken the law more than 300,000 times by making cold calls. Well, to sort out what's going on, it's a very good afternoon to our team from Goldsborough Financial Services, Lachlan Harvey and Craig Kirkwood. How are you, gentlemen?
Very well, thank you, Alan.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
The Royal Commission just keeps on giving, doesn't it?
It's one of those things. It does, and it's not going to stop. There's going to be plenty more to come out. They're talking about insurance at the moment, and particularly in the last few days, direct insurance, where they're contacting people over the phone, getting them to sign up. There was that really sort of nasty case where it appeared that someone that didn't have the intellectual capability to make the decision of his own was talked into taking out insurance cover. It's not a good look for the insurance industry, but I guess our experience with life insurance has been really quite different to that. It's really a direct contrast to what we're seeing in the Royal Commission. Our experience with insurance has been enormously empowering for those people that are taking out the insurance cover. It's been really reaffirming for us as an advisor when we get a great outcome for someone that has taken out insurance and then is called upon. They really need it in a time of crisis.
Yeah, in a time of need. We should point out that the company that I mentioned, it's a Clearview Wealth, 300,000 times they did cold calling. Now, cold calling is not authorised, is it? That's where you just ring out of the blue and effectively sign up a customer.
Yeah, there's laws against that. It really is quite different to what we do in terms of providing insurance advice to our financial planning clients. And that's probably what we'd rather sort of focus on, the positives of taking out insurance cover and some of the differences between the cover that you might get sold over the phone to the cover that you voluntarily take out yourself because it fits your needs the best.
Now, the gents are here to take your calls on anything financial. It doesn't have to be about insurance. It can be about super or whatever. They'll be here for the next half hour or so. So give us a call, 822-3000. Now, Craig, you're Goldsborough's life insurance specialist advisor, so this is your patch. Let's do, as Lockie said, split the difference between what these cold callers are doing and what you can offer in your industry.
Sure, okay. Well, direct insurance is the stuff that we see advertised on TV, through magazines or in a supermarket. And their strategy really is they underwrite or they ask all the questions at the time of claim. So to get the policy in force, it's a quick process, really short questions about medical history or lifestyle. They don't delve into it too much. But when you come to claim, they really then dig into it. And what they're looking for is essentially how do they avoid the claim? And the sort of things they can associate with that is you might have had high blood pressure when you applied for the claim. That may have contributed potentially to a stroke or heart attack, and they will then say that contributed and they'll deny the claim. And that's, we do see lots of claims denied in the direct insurance space. It's important to point out that's not a product we deal with. And a lot of those direct insurance products will carve out things. So I think in your previous program, talking about mental health, that's one thing they do carve out, and that's the biggest claim for white collar workers that we see.
Is it really? Mental health is the biggest claim.
Mental health is the biggest. I think back injuries are the second biggest, which brings in blue collar workers.
Yes,
so they're the two things. If they're carved out, or one of them's carved out, you've got a really inferior policy to start with.
And the premiums might not reflect that.
Well, that's it. I think even with some of the premiums, they don't come out as cheap as what you might think versus a normal underwritten policy. But yeah, they can stack it up as quite cheap, but people are holding these policies for 5 and 10 years. But the important thing is when they come to claim and it's denied, they don't refund those premiums. So you're paying a premium for something that you can't be sure that you can claim on.
All right. Well, how does an insurer... Let's go back a step further. Before I actually take out specific insurance, most superannuation schemes include a type of insurance. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, so your employer super has to have a default level of insurance cover. And we think that's pretty good. They're talking about taking that default cover away for young people on the basis of why would young people need insurance. I think that's crazy. I think young people are the most vulnerable if they can never work again, well, hang on, they've got the longest to fund themselves. I think probably they're the ones that need the insurance the most. That's a separate issue. I think the quality of the cover through superannuation funds has declined over the years as these companies become more competitive. They're trying to reduce their rates and become more attractive to the superannuation trustees. And what we've seen by doing a direct comparison between the insurance that is offered by your average super fund versus the insurance that you can get if you take it out yourself through a financial planner, there is a really clear difference between the quality of the cover, and it's a measurable difference. So there's specific things that you can obtain through cover that you take out yourself that are not covered through your policy for super.
Okay, that's interesting, because I would imagine most people like myself just go along with the super one, think, yeah, I've got that cover, but I don't know what the fine print is.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, we do have a lot of comparison tools that help us work out what policy you've got existing. That cover can be good because it is provided without underwriting initially. And if people do have health issues, it's, we, you know, it's important we keep that. If you can get through underwriting initially, where they do ask all the questions, and they're the, that's the policy that we recommend. Where the policy is issued, you know all of the health issues up front, and just provides certainty that, that in the event of a claim, there's no nasty surprises that'll turn up.
What about income protection? Should I have income protection?
Yes. Yes. Everyone that's working should have income protection insurance. It's a personal choice as to whether they choose to or not, but it is a very useful thing. So typically, people that are driving around have car insurance. Most homeowners have insurance on their own home. When you work out what your biggest asset is, and if you multiply your annual salary by the amount of years that you expect to be working until retirement, for most people, their biggest asset is their ability to earn an income.
The vast majority of people wouldn't consider that an asset until you've pointed it out now. Well, it is an asset, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
We don't stop and think about that.
Yeah, you might have a $400,000 home, but then you might have, if you earn $50,000 a year for the next 10 years, well, that's $500,000 of income that you probably should be insuring. Some of the insurance policies through superannuation will cover you for income protection, but they'll be very limited. Most of them only apply for, say, 2 years. And if you've got 10 years to work or 20 years to work until retirement, 2 years is not really going to cut it, is it? What do you do after that period? So you should be thinking, okay, income protection, how can we take out the best quality of cover that covers the most possible events and lasts for the longest possible period of time? And for a lot of insurance policies, that'll mean that it lasts until age 65.
Right. We're talking insurance with the boys from Goldsborough Financial Services. If you've got any questions, give us a call, 8223 0000. Craig, is the benefit of coming to you guys, and you particularly, because you're the insurance expert, can you tailor something specifically for my needs? You know, middle-aged, bald, overweight guy like myself, can you draw me up a policy that ticks all the boxes?
Describing all of us here?
We can certainly do our best, but that's the whole point, is that no insurer are the same, so they've all got different reinsurers and different reasons to exclude or maybe load a policy. So if clients come in and they do have a weight issue or something like that, insurers will view that differently, so we will make sure that we go to the right insurer to get the best underwriting outcome for each client. They might have particular issues that they're concerned about from family members maybe a pre-existing condition, or their father had a heart attack or something. So they really want to concentrate on that medical definition. So every client will sit down, go through their needs, and then work out how much insurance they need, give them an indication of cost, and then we might end up looking at, you know, what would you like to self-insure? If the insurance cost is too much, the other way is to retain the risk and self-insure that.
Hang on, what's self-insuring?
So self-insuring is where you, so income protection, for example, the minimum waiting period is normally 30 days, but you might decide that you'll have a 90-day waiting period because you've got enough savings or sick leave, and essentially you're self-insuring that period so that you cover the cost of that, and then the insurer will pay you after 90 days.
Yeah, okay. What are inside-out insurance? Can someone explain what that means?
Good terminology.
Yeah.
And it refers to whether the insurance is taken out inside of super or outside, or a combination of both. So, Craig, we do a lot of this in the office, where people are taking out most of the insurance cover inside of super, but topping it up by some cover outside of super with a policy that gets all bundled up together. And it's a very clever way to do it.
See, I didn't know you could do that.
There's some real advantages in doing it.
It's a fairly new method that has come out. So holding it inside of super has tax advantages and advantages from cash flow. But superannuation rules are really quite strict on how and when you can be paid out on that policy. So by holding that outside portion, it means that if we encounter any problems, we can then utilise the outside portion to allow the insurer to pay that.
Excellent. Yeah.
So it's theoretically possible that someone might have an insurance policy inside their super fund where the insurance claim is paid, but the super fund is unable to release the money because the rules around when you can access your money in super might be different to the definitions of disability on the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a terrible situation. If you got approved for your lump sum payout for your disability, but the super fund didn't release it, that'd be a major problem. And that's what that inside-out insurance does, is it links the two together. So you might pay a small top-up amount outside of super, just so that you get the best possible policy at the cheapest possible rate.
We've got Lachlan Harvey with us and Craig Kirkwood from Goldsborough Financial Services. We're talking about insurance. So if you've got any queries, any comments, give us a call, 822-3000. Let's talk about the minimum amount of assurance I should have. Obviously, it depends on my age and my exposure and what I do for a living, etc. And also, can we be overinsured? Let's begin with the minimum. How much is too little? Or how much is too much?
Okay, well, probably on the income protection point of view, the most you can insure is 75% of your income. So the insurer wants to encourage you to get back to work and earn 100% of your income. So we would probably say that's also the minimum. 75% of your income is a good base, unless you're on a really good wage and could say, well, look, I can afford to live on a lot less. But normally most people will have 75%. And then we'd look at the waiting period. That might be 30, 60, 90 days, depending on that sick leave. And like Lachlan mentioned, that would run to age 65, retirement age.
And we've got a text here when we were discussing that before from an anonymous text. 90 days without pay, what great insurance? Not. It's a good point, isn't it? You know, that 90-day waiting period, it's a long time.
It is a good point. And you're not going to take out an insurance policy that has a 90-day waiting period before you first start getting paid, unless you've got a really good plan in place for where you're going to cover yourself. Now, if you've got savings or a pool of money that you can access, or if you've got a whole bunch of long service and annual leave that you'd expect to use up first before you go on claim, then that seems like a reasonable solution. And by extending the waiting period out from, say, 30 days to 90 days, you might be dramatically reducing the cost of cover. And there'd be some real savings as a result of that. So that's something that you can do to try and make it more cost-effective.
So that's negotiable.
So that's negotiable. And the other part of the income protection that is negotiable is how long you get paid for. And as I said before, 2 years is not a very long period of time when you really want to be paid through to, say, age 65, a reasonable retirement age. And I think if you had the choice between reducing the cost by increasing the waiting period or reducing the amount of years that you get paid for, you'd probably increase the waiting period because then you're still covered for those really big life-changing events.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, we're not 75%, you say, income protection. That's where we should start from. If I can't afford that, we then obviously work backwards to it down to, you know, 50
like
or whatever.
Like I mentioned, you would look at maybe the waiting period, the benefit period, and then the sum insured. So they're probably the three main variables that you can play around with to get the premium down. And so that's around income protection. And then on the lump sum cover with life insurance and permanent disability, at a minimum, we want to repay debt. So non-deductible debt, we would look to repay. Other things we might look into is a family, what they want to happen. If they want the surviving spouse to get a carer in, or if they'll keep working, if they want to cover their children's education costs. So there's a lot of things that we delve through. And again, that can come back. If we come back to a sum insured, minimum sum insured of, say, you know, 1 million, 1.2, they may then say, well, look, we'll self-insure the kids' education costs. And, so they start working back, or they accept the amount insured. But at least then they know what cover do we need and what risks will we take by not taking the full amount of cover.
Is there sort of an average that you would recommend a typical listener, say, 50 years old? How much life insurance should we have?
It does vary a fair bit because people have different lifestyles and different expectations. And for instance, a lot of variation in the amount that people get paid, and they get used to living in a certain way. I think Craig made a good point. Always be paying off debt and then provide yourself with a lump sum and work out what you need that lump sum to do. Is that lump sum to provide a regular income? Is it to make changes to your lifestyle, to adapt to having a disability?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole range of personal circumstances that can factor in, and that's why it's worthwhile getting advice not just on what is the best cover to get, what's the cheapest cover, but also what level of cover do you actually need?
Mm-hmm.
We've also been dealing with a fair bit in the office, people making claims, and that's really pays to have a financial advisor behind you, someone that's got some experience in doing that and has a process in place. I had a case earlier this year where I was helping a client that was making a claim for total permanent disability insurance, and it was predominantly mental health that they were claiming for, and it was a fair battle for them to get all of the paperwork together, to get the doctor's statements, all of that information in the one place so that they could support their claim. And it did take a while, and sometimes those delays can create little hurdles that really put people off, and they get partway through making a claim and they never complete it, and that'd be a huge shame. And we don't want to see that. We want to see people having a really good claims experience.
That's really good advice, Lockie. And I can add to that, just in my experience when I had the cancer scare, to make an insurance claim, I had to do the full report. And my advice to anyone listening is every time you go and have a scan, when you've got cancer, you get scanned almost every second day, PET scans, CT scans and stuff, ask for a copy of the report once you go to your doctor. Normally they don't give it to you unless you ask for it. And you've got that as proof. That's part of your file to put your report together.
Yeah.
So that's some of the best advice that I'd add to that.
That's a good tip.
Got another text here from Bud at Hewitt. He's saying, hi, is the 90-day consecutive, 90 days of waiting period consecutive or working days Monday to Friday? Does it have to be 90 consecutive days?
No, that'd be
Monday to Friday.
Yeah, 3 months Monday to Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there you go.
And it's important with a policy that does have a 90-day waiting period like that. It's really different. So some policies out there, the more basic ones, will say as soon as you go back to work and you're in there for 1 day, your waiting period resets again. Whereas a good policy will allow you to try and encourage you to get back to work, and you can be back at work 2 or 3 days a week without restarting that waiting period. So
the devil is in the detail with insurance policy wording, and that's how these insurance companies create just a little bit of wriggle room for themselves to wriggle out of a claim. The tools that we use as advisors, we have really comprehensive comparison tools to compare all those little nuances in the policy wording, and it really is important that you have the broadest possible insurance policy to cover the widest possible range of circumstances when you want to make a claim.
That falls into this next text from Ian. The text line, by the way, is 0448081395. He's saying, Ian said, I had some income protection, but when it cut out after 2 years, I couldn't even find it in the policy until I looked with my magnifying lens on page 52.
About the two-year benefit payment period.
As you say, devil is in the detail.
Yeah.
Check the details.
And that is pretty typical of a lot of superannuation-based insurance policies. Now, what we can do where someone comes in and says, hey, look, I've got this insurance policy through my super. It's pretty cheap. It seems like really good value, but it only lasts for 2 years. What should I do? Well, we can take out a separate policy that kicks in after 2 years. And that might be considerably cheaper than a policy that starts after 30 days, for instance. So something that kicks in after 2 years, so that if in the event that you were not able to go back to work after 2 years, you've got a separate policy that then kicks
that
in and
then
takes
kicks
over.
In.
Yeah.
That is forward planning.
Yeah, and that works pretty well. So long as your first policy stays in place for that period of time, they're both there when you need them.
What if I've got a policy that after speaking to you gentlemen, I'm clearly not getting good value for money. My premiums are too high, and what I'm going to get at the end of it, can I get out of it?
Well, the good thing with insurance is you're not locked in for a period or minimum period, a year. It's a monthly premium usually. If you are paying it annually and you cancel for any reason, they'll prorate your premium refund. If we find anyone that does have insurance and we are replacing it, we'll never cancel the policy before any new insurance goes in force.
And that's probably a really good tip for people that are consolidating their superannuation. We see this all the time. People are moving their super to get it together because they're trying to get their life in order, and that's a really admirable thing. But look at the insurance first and make sure that you're not cancelling perfectly good cover, and then you've got to reapply and it's either more expensive or you can't get it for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that sort of leads us into the next point, doesn't it? If you make a claim, you may not be able to claim on that insurance policy again under those criteria?
Yeah, well, a lot of policies have, again, the good policies will have buyback. So if a client maybe claims on a trauma event, cancer, for example, they will let you buy back the trauma after 12 months, 3 months, but it probably will exclude cancer again, or very likely will, but at least you get the cover back again if it's, you know, heart attack or something else develops. So it's important to have that. Again, a lot of those things are buried in the policy document, so it's good to have someone that knows what's been put in force and what the benefits are.
That's a real dilemma, though, isn't it? Because you're right, I'll put up my hand. That happened to me. I made an insurance claim when I got crook. They offered to buy back, but not going to cover me from insurance for cancer. Guess what? I'm likely to get it again, but they don't want to touch me. That's a real dilemma for the client.
It is quite hard. I mean, some of them will let you buy back life cover, which is probably a little comfort. But yeah, it's really hard to get cover for that same event again.
Can you go to another company? Would they let you go down that path?
In short, no. That you'll have to go through underwriting. Again, a direct insurer will probably take the cover on, but it would be denied if something came up.
Now we have in the past successfully helped people to get cover where they have had cancer before, but there's a period of time where the insurance company will want them to be clear of the cancer before they will take that client on.
Right, so there is a sort of a cooling off period. You're in remission for X amount of years.
And for a lot of companies,
five years seems to
be a reasonable time frame.
Survival for 5 years seems to be the survival rate for the statistics, so I'm not surprised that's what the insurance companies use.
But that claims process is quite important to find all that. And we do have a detailed claims process, and I just wanted to point out that it's on our website if anyone wants to look at it at www.goldsborough.com.au. But we follow that through as a set protocol, and it sets out our processes for each claim, and it means it's thorough and really takes away that red tape from a client in the event of a claim and try and relieve a lot of that stress.
Well, I'd applaud everyone to make an appointment with you guys and get some advice, having been down this path.
Please do, because it's very rare that we can't help someone or improve the insurance that they have in place.
Yeah, okay. Fantastic. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Goldsborough Financial Services, you'll find them at 120 Greenhill Road in Unley. Now, the number to make an appointment with one of the consultants is 8378 4000. That's 8378 4000. Or, as Craig said, the website is goldsborough.com.au.